Good morning, everyone. Education Innovation Policy will come to order on this wonderful January 26th. There's a quorum present. The clerk will note the roll. And Representative Haley, I found a technical correction in the minutes, but aside from that, would you be so kind as to move approval?
I'll move approval of the minutes, Madam Chair.
Representative Haley moves approval with technical changes of the January 24th meeting. Are there any additions to my technical correction? Not. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Well, members, this is the last time we'll be together during this special week of school choice. And so we have invited in some wonderful guests from charter schools. And so I would like the Pillsbury United Communities to come forward, their spokespeople, and to introduce us to this wonderful opportunity that our students have been afforded. And members, once they have presented, I'm going to have all the cadets who are in the audience stand and introduce themselves. Welcome to our committee. Let's start here with you, sir. Say your name for the record.
Larry McKenzie.
Welcome, Mr. McKenzie.
And good morning, Madam Chair and distinguished ladies and gentlemen of the House. Pleased this morning to have this opportunity to represent Pillsbury United Community and a few of the students that we serve in our portfolio that will be speaking this morning.
Welcome. Please say your name and begin.
I'm Nadia Fricke from HSRE.
My name is Cassandra Shawanek. I'm from Minnesota Virtual High School.
And sir?
My name is Ayule Brown, and I'm from...
Would you put the microphone by your...
My name is Ayule Brown, and I'm from Darrell, T.C.
Very good. Welcome. So who would like to begin to talk about your experience in this charter school world? Nadia, thank you.
Okay. Well, I started off of really rough, doing really hard in public schools. Doesn't really work out for me. So when I found HSRA, it kind of opened my mind to new experiences. I didn't know that it was a charter school for a while. I didn't actually know what a charter school was for a while. But I think it's the opportunities and the, like, the experiences that I've had at HSRA, really, I'm kind of glad that I'm there. It's really a, like, probably the best school that I've ever gone to, and I probably I really, really want to work there when I graduate, and I really would recommend it to a lot of students who have trouble at public schools, and yeah, so.
Thank you very much. That was very good.
Thank you for having me.
And from our other students, would you like to speak? Why don't you say your name again so that we have it on the record?
Cassandra Shamanik. I'm 16-year-old junior in high school. I'm here today to tell you why I chose Minnesota Virtual High School. About a year ago, I had bad stomach problems and missed out on a lot of school. They found out that I had gastritis, the inflammation of the stomach, so I decided to do online. And I can say I'm very pleased that I chose Minnesota Virtual High School. It might have been stressful at first, but I worked my way through it. I enjoy that you can work at your own pace, email your own teachers during school hours for questions on your material, and can be provided with a laptop for the school year for families with low income like mine. Honestly appreciate all the teachers and their help. I've improved way more this year than any other of my high school years. And I thank you for that, and I thank you, Minnesota Virtual High School, for being an alternative opportunity for only me but other students. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Shamanik. That was very good. And Cadet Brown, would you please speak into the microphone now and say your name again, please?
My name is Ayani Brown, and I'm a freshman cadet at the General College El Palo Leadership Academy. I would like to thank you all for the opportunity to speak with you today about my school and in support of National School Choice Week. The General College El Palo Leadership Academy is part of the Minnesota Transition Charter School District and Minnesota Transition High School. The foundation of our Leadership Academy is the Junior ROTC program. We are the only JROTC program in all of Minneapolis and Hennepin County. The reason why I chose to attend the Power Leadership Academy and JROTC is because I was attracted to the structure, discipline, pride, and sense of belonging that the Academy has to offer. JROTC and Academy is like a family to me. I have made some great friends who work out every morning. I currently maintain a GPA of 3.8, and I am the top cadet in my class academically and the top freshman in the entire high school. I have learned a great deal about leadership, citizenship, teamwork, and communication. We live by the values of loyalty, duty, respect, self-service, honor, integrity, and personal courage. My goal is to graduate high school, receive a senior ROTC scholarship to a major university studying being a second lieutenant. I want to make this my career. I'm accompanied today by my fellow cadets, Leo Baraga, Jaquan Robertson, Brian Vargas, and Lizeth De La Cruz. Again, thank you for this opportunity. I will be happy to answer any questions you may have about our school.
Thank you, Cadet Brown, and thank all three of you. So, members, we have just a great variety here. We have the arts, and we have virtual, and then we have the Leadership Academy. So it shows you the wide scope of the schools that Pillsbury United Communities has authorized. I think, sir, isn't it 19 schools that you authorize? Will you tell us a little bit about that?
So, yeah, we currently have 19 schools operational, and as you said, a variety of schools, performing arts schools, leadership, ROTC, K through 12. We serve actually over 8,000 students in the state of Minnesota. So 18 schools that are in Minneapolis and St. Paul, school in Rochester. We have two schools that are currently in pre-operational, including one in Duluth.
Very good. Members, are there questions for these testifiers? Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and welcome to all of you here today. It's great to start my day off seeing and listening to young people. My best wishes to each and every one of you and your education. So vitally important. Very quickly, I know a little bit about Pillsbury. I think it's, and Madam Chair, I think it's a pretty high-quality authorizer that works awfully hard in the state to be present where, for many students, there may not be real good opportunities for them to succeed. I know that a number of your schools, sir, are work with and address a variety of cultures, races, income. I wonder if you could say a little bit, share a little bit with us about Pillsbury's philosophy and approach relative to being an authorizer of schools that provide that kind of cultural relevancy and racial equity relevancy for our students.
Yeah, I think if you look at the information that's been provided with you, you would see that we offer a portfolio that is very diverse, serving a great variety of schools. And so we serve elementary schools, and we're proud to also be the authorizer of Friendship Academy of the Arts, which was most recently recognized as a Blue Ribbon School, not only one of the top schools in the state of Minnesota, but one of the top schools in the country. And then we serve a variety of schools that some would consider credit recovery schools, high school recording arts, mm-hmm. some of the other schools. But for us, what we found is that, you know, in a great deal of our portfolio, it presents opportunities for kids who would sometimes not necessarily have an opportunity to finish school. And I think if we look at that from a financial standpoint, many times, for example, the other day, I met a young man that was, he was at his 22nd school.
Oh, my.
And in spite of some of the challenges, he was very, very enthused that he was looking to graduate and go to UCLA to become a nurse. So this is a young man that, for whatever reason, at 21 other schools, it had not worked out. But because of this niche of schools and the opportunities that we present at some of the schools that we serve, he had a, you know, some kids look for a second chance. He had a 22nd chance. So, again, as you said, very diverse portfolio. with a special niche of really, really serving kids that are at risk.
Thank you, Mr. McKenzie. So how do you find students? Is it through the web? How did they find you? Is there a special promotional that Pillsbury United Communities with their 19 charter schools does to find students or?
Well, again, as the authorizer, I mean, our primary job is to provide oversight and make sure that we always like to say that all the kids have an opportunity to receive a high-quality education. So each of our schools operate independently. And I can tell you, the schools find kids anywhere. If you go to the Mall of America, you'll see a advertisement about the virtual school.
Yes.
So kids are walking through the Mall of America, mm-hmm. see advertisement there. And then we have a high school that actually sends their safety team out on the streets every night, and they look for homeless kids and kids that are involved in gangs and talk to them about returning to school. So it's a variety of ways that kids find our schools. And we, like most folks, we hope that some folks go to the internet. But I can tell you we have a lot of people throughout our portfolio that are working really hard in a variety of ways to make sure kids are getting a high-quality education.
So, Mr. McKenzie, I can't remember. I saw the ad at Mall of America for the virtual high school. But does it also note that Pillsbury United Communities is the authorizer? I can't remember if I saw that disclaimer.
It usually does not.
Okay.
It's more of an advertisement for the schools.
Very good. Very good. Other questions, members? Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning. I'm so glad to see all of you here, and I hope that you will come back and visit us. Do you have time to tour the Capitol today? If you don't, I hope you'll come.
I'm sure the Colonel will make sure that, and the other leadership here will make sure that that happens.
Madam Chair,
Representative Ward.
Thank you. I do hope that you'll take the time at some point anyway to tour the renovated Capitol and see your representatives and your senators. You have a chance to meet them because I'm gathering that your students come from all over.
Mm-hmm.
Now, thank you all for coming. I have just one quick question. Is it Nadia? Yeah.
Yes.
What does HRSA stand for?
It's HSR.
HS.
High School for Recording Arts. Yeah.
And if I could just say, their school is also, if you watch the Grammys, I think it's coming up in the next couple of weeks, they're up for a Grammy Award, one of their students, soon.
Nadia?
We have a project at our school. We're starting the next one next term. It's the Royalty Project, and this is actually how I found out about the school. It's through this song. I think it was not last year, but the year before. I'm not sure. But they had a song called Royalty, which is up for the Grammy. It went viral on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all of those things. And that's another opportunity why I like the school so much, is because it gives you opportunities to go to places. Like some students that are involved with the project get to go to LA for the show. And it's a really cool thing that we get to be involved with that. Yeah.
Thank you, Nadia. That was very well said. Representative Pryor, last question.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. So first, to continue that, we're so glad that you're here. For a lot of us, this is early in the morning that we showed up to be down in the basement. So we appreciate that you're coming. And I would like to hear a little bit more from the students about, maybe you told us that you think this is the right experience for you, and it's working, and maybe just one more thing about what makes it special. So if you could tell me, what you've enjoyed studying, or if there is a favorite teacher and why that teacher works for you and makes the difference for you in your education. So just a little bit more about your stories, if you would share.
Nadia, do you want to take it first, please?
Okay. What I find most enjoyable to study is at our school we have it's a thing called the live show. And it has to do with, we have a studio at our school, recording arts. And so what I never learned about or anything before in my entire life is about a studio.
So that's the best thing. And it's also good because I can earn English credit through there, math credit, that's just what I love about that school, and it's the best thing that I've ever learned in my life, I would say. And my favorite teacher, she's not really a teacher, but she works with, like, accounting. Her name is Roxy. She's helped me a lot with, I'm an intern in the studio, so I learned about interning, and also the live show that we have, she's helped me out a lot with learning new things. And then also, she's helped me with things outside of school as well, like getting a job, trying to get my license, and things like that. So I'm really grateful that I have her there.
And Cassandra, at the virtual high school?
At the virtual high school, they try to help you as much as you can. I have the hardest time with comprehension, and so it was at the end of the semester we had, like, this big final in English.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to, like, read a whole, like, book or chapter. It wasn't a book, but something to write an essay on. And I emailed my English teacher and asked them if I had any other alternative assignments, because it would take me a good month to read all of it to actually comprehend and understand it to write the essay. And they're pretty flexible of giving you alternative assignments so you could get the grade and pass. Like yesterday, I asked my history teacher last minute if there was any other tests I could redo to get a higher grade, any other of my classes. And yeah, they're just really flexible with assignments. They try to do assignments that are at your level, and they're really good at, like, emailing you back as soon as possible. And yeah, I really enjoy Minnesota Virtual High School.
So were you able to, Cassandra, listen to whatever this reading was that you were assigned, or a comparable?
I think so.
Yes.
I don't remember.
Because audio would be very good if you're, at least you hear the words and the phrasing, and that's all very good for helping you improve your comprehension. So think about that as an option, too, when that tough assignment comes around. I'm a former English teacher, so I know you need options. Cadet Brown, would you like to say something favorite about the Colin Powell Academy?
One thing that I think that we're doing really good at is making sure that everybody's grades are up. Because the activities we do, like color guard and drills and ceremony, and competitive challenges with other schools, other JROTC programs, they make sure we get our grades done. Like, if we have anything lower than a C, we don't get to do any of it. So the number one priority thing, as we all say, is our grades.
Very good. That's a lot of structure, isn't it, at the academy? And that's definitely what some children, maybe all children, need, but definitely what some want. So excellent. Very good for you. Thank you so much. And before you leave, I want the cadets in the audience to stand. And will you give your last names as you did when I met you? So we can hear you nice and loud. And members, let's give them a nice round of applause. Thank you so much for being here, and I hope you can do as Representative Ward suggested, tour the Capitol if you have some extra time, or at least come back. We're very proud of you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And with that, members, we'll move to our first bill. Representative Knobloch. Welcome to our committee.
Well, it's good to be here. I'd appreciate it if someone would move that House Bill 387 be referred to the Tax Committee.
I will do that, Representative Knobloch. Would you introduce yourself first? You can tell us what your responsibility is here, too.
All right. I'm Representative Jim Knobloch. I represent District 14B, which is primarily the city of St. Cloud and a couple townships to the east, and I'm also chair of the House Ways and Means Committee.
And welcome to our committee. We're delighted to have you. And I will move House File 387 to be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. And with that, members, we would like to hear an explanation from Representative Knobloch. You have everything in your folders. This is another tax credit bill, different from the one we heard on Tuesday, but nevertheless another refundable tax credit. Representative Knobloch.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Members, House File 387 does three things. Number one, it updates the existing education tax credit and the existing tax deduction for the inflation that has taken place since they were last updated. Number two, it puts in place an inflator so the existing tax credit and existing tax deduction are automatically updated each year since it has been 20 years now since they were last updated. Finally, it makes private school tuition, which has been eligible for Minnesota's tax deduction since 1955, eligible for the education tax credit. The existing education tax deduction was, as I said, enacted in 1955. Private school tuition has been covered by the existing tax deduction since 1955. In addition, other education costs that I'll talk about later with the education tax credit are eligible for the tax deduction. Currently, families can get up to $1,625 for every student K through 6 for the tax deduction, or $2,500 for children grades 7 through 12. I would note this tax deduction is available to even the highest income taxpayers. Millionaires in Minnesota have been getting tax deductions for private school tuition since 1955 and continue to do so today. However, because of the progressivity of our tax system, the tax deduction is virtually useless for low-income families. The bill updates these amounts, as I mentioned, for the over 50% inflation that has taken place since they were last updated. The existing education tax credit was enacted in 1997. It provides a refundable 75% credit of up to $1,000 per child of parents of public, private, and homeschool children. But it starts to phase out for families that make $33,500 and more. It covers a variety of school expenses like school supplies, computer software, tutoring, music instrument rental, field trip transportation, after-school enrichment fees, and other costs. Those costs are also all covered by the tax deduction. Unlike the education tax deduction, the tax credit does not cover private school tuition. That's the only difference between what the credit and deduction do or do not cover. This bill raises the amount of the credit to $1,500 and adjusts the income qualifying level up to $50,000 to reflect the inflation that has taken place since the program was put into law. It makes the expenses covered by the tax credit and the tax deduction identical, so low to lower middle income families can now get a tax benefit for private school tuition like high income families can get. Lower income families who send their children to public, private, and homeschool will all benefit from the increased tax credits and deductions in this bill. This bill corrects the discrimination we have against low-income families on our current law, in which we provide a tax deduction for private school tuition that only benefits high-income families while denying a tax credit for that same purpose to low-income families. Earlier this week, you heard testimony about the benefits of expanded school choice. I wasn't planning on bringing any additional witnesses, but I know there are some people that have showed up to testify against my bill, so I do have one, Mr. Jim Bartholomew, that I'd appreciate if he could come forward and speak on behalf of the bill.
Thank you, Representative Knobloch. Mr. Bartholomew, welcome to the testifying table, and please say your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members, Representative Knobloch. My name is Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of House File 387, and in particular, the education tax credit provisions. We believe updating both the income eligibility and the tax credit amounts, as done in this bill and in Representative Anderson's coming bill, is appropriate. especially given the fact, as Representative Knobloch mentioned, it's been nearly 20 years since these amounts were last set. These updated amounts will help low-income families support their children's education by improving their ability to provide tutoring services, instructional materials, and even music lessons. We also encourage you to expand the eligible uses of the credit by including tuition. By including tuition, we can help equalize the ability of all families to choose the school they believe will best meet their children's needs. Choosing which school you're going to send your son or daughter to is an important decision, and finding the best fit for them will play a key role in determining their success. As you consider this bill, we'd ask that you think about it through the eyes of a family. Specifically, a family that can use financial help to either supplement their child's education or select the school they believe will best meet their children's needs. We believe the changes in House File 387 will not only help individual students, but our educational system as a whole. And again, thank you, and we'd ask that you support House File 387.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bartholomew. Representative Knobloch, this seems to me to be more of a middle-class recommendation also as far as the limits. So we're expanding, right, so that we're within, I think, a lot of the income that our families receive.
Yeah, I think it's low to lower middle class income. I mean, $50,000 depends on where you are in the state.
Yes.
You know, in your district or
that's
in
right.
some of the suburban districts. You know, what $50,000 a year buys is a lot different. But again, this $50,000 number is really just an adjustment for inflation since this bill was first enacted back in 1997 when it was $33,500 as it is today, and that's how we've come up with the $50,000 number.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify in support of House File 387? Well, those who have concerns, you know, we didn't have very much time for support, so I would recommend that not everyone who has concerns come down at one time because we do have another bill, and I imagine the concerns are the same. So I'm going to call on Jane Hannon from St. Cloud Schools, if she's in the audience, a speech-language pathologist. I think she's from Education Minnesota, who has concerns. And Tiffany Dietrich, language arts instructor from White Bear Lake High School, also with Education Minnesota. Would you please come down?
Have you been to my house for a minute?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, well, on Pandolfo, right?
Huh?
Is it? Oh, wait a minute. No,
Holland Drive.
Holland Drive, okay. NUA's up there. They're pretty close.
Welcome, Ms. Hannon. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Yeah, Jane Hannon. So, Chair Kristen Erickson and members of the committee. As you know, I'm Jane Hannon from St. Cloud, and this is my 42nd year working in the field of education.
Jane, would you move a little closer to that microphone?
Oh,
thank
okay.
you. We need to have this on record.
Okay, you want me to start over?
Yes, please.
Okay. Chair Erickson and members of the committee, as you know, I'm Jane Hannon from St. Cloud. This is my 42nd year in the field of education. My work has been in the small outstate schools, and currently I'm employed in the St. Cloud Public Schools. My experience with St. Cloud has been in elementary, high school, and early childhood program. I've done home-based, pull-out, push-in services, and have provided services to students attending Head Start programs. Currently, I'm working with a student that is participating in the migrant seasonal Head Start program. I'm here today representing the committed teachers and staff I have and had the privilege to work with. I'm also here as a grandma of six children who attend rural public schools, and I'm also here as a taxpayer to testify against House File 387. This bill would, in fact, pull much-needed resources away from our public schools for the benefit of the private school. As we know, the private schools are not held to the same accountability, transparency, and other requirements that public schools are. They don't have to take every student who walks through their classroom door. They can choose who they want to admit. They do not have to take students like mine. Presently, in my current assignment, I work in an elementary school where 96% of the families qualify for free lunch. Each day, we have two interpreters and one person who works full-time directly with students in poverty to adjust and learn what acceptable behaviors are in the public school system or in public and to be with others. Also, this individual works to foster these children's growth in self-esteem. We also have teachers who are specifically assigned to reinforce students' learning in reading and math outside the regular classroom time. Because the time in the regular classroom for these subjects is not adequate to provide the additional opportunities of practice to help these students master their skills needed to move on to the next level. Within the classrooms I have been in, many children will communicate to us through their challenging behaviors that they have needs that now need to be met. For example, one elementary that I had worked in, we kept track and we had an average of 7 incidences daily of students whose behaviors were so challenging that the classroom teacher had to remove the other students from the classroom into the hall for the safety of others. To meet these children's needs, the school then hired an additional 2 staff as behaviorists to directly work with these students so they may experience more success in the classroom. Our children have great needs, and this bill proposed by Representative Knobloch will negatively impact the public school's ability to meet these children's needs. Chair Erickson and members of committees, I ask you to oppose this bill. Each day, 2 teachers that I have the privilege of working with in their classroom, they have their children giving themselves a hug. And then the children repeat after the teachers, "I am important and smart. I am ready to learn." We must have the resources to be ready to teach. We need to fund our public schools and ensure we are giving all of our students the tools they need to reach their full potential and to be future members of our society. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hennen. Ms. Dietrich, would you move close to the microphone and introduce yourself and begin?
Good morning, Chairwoman Erickson. My name is Tiffany Dietrich, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak before your committee today in opposition to House File 387 and to the broader proposition of a voucherized educational system in the state of Minnesota. I am the grateful recipient of a high-quality public education in northern rural Minnesota, and I'm also proud to be the first in my family to have graduated from college. This year marks my 20th year as an educator in White Bear Lake, where I was honored to represent my profession as Teacher of the Year in 2001. Throughout my career, I've been a passionate advocate for my students and for my profession, which is what brings me here today. To my mind, the present nationwide push toward voucherizing education represents the greatest threat to equitable educational opportunity that we have seen in recent history. Semantically disguised as tuition tax credits, proponents of vouchers tout them as a means through which low-income families can gain access to high-quality education. Yet vouchers rarely offer the depth of financial support that truly allows access for these families. The underlying bias in their argument is that students do not receive quality education in our public schools. And while I will concede that there are certainly issues we need to address within our current system, if equitable access is truly our goal, our time and money would be better spent to reform the present system than to remove funding and create greater impediments within our public schools. Vouchers offer the illusion of equity while perpetuating de facto segregation, which, while might not always be racial in nature, is most certainly socioeconomic. They divert valuable resources from public schools, hurting low-income schools, as well as schools in greater Minnesota. Furthermore, private schools that receive taxpayer dollars through voucher and tax credit programs are not scrutinized in the same manner as our public schools, as my colleague mentioned before. They frequently operate with little oversight, minimal academic and financial reporting requirements, and often require lower standards for teacher preparation. As a public school educator, I have long struggled with comparisons made between the success of students in private and charter schools compared to the success of our students in public schools. Truth be told, such comparisons are like comparing apples to oranges. Data is presented without acknowledging that these schools have the ability to be selective, thus turning away students. It is seldom revealed that they are not held to the same standards when it comes to ensuring that students receive English language supports, special education services, or access to school transportation. Similar to the student's testimony earlier this morning, on Tuesday afternoon, I listened to testimony before the education committees in the Senate. This testimony referenced the sense of community, love, discipline, and rigor that the witness experienced as a student in a private school, and of his desire to provide that same opportunity to all students. Please note, the same opportunities are presently offered through strong public community schools throughout the state of Minnesota, whose doors are truly open to all students, and whose educators continually hold their students to high academic standards, celebrate and cultivate the many wonderful assets of their diverse student bodies, as well as provide valuable academic, social, and emotional supports for our students. If vouchers in the form of tuition tax credits are not the answer, what do? We engage in the hard work of bolstering the long-standing tradition of public education in the United States. We fully fund full-service community schools and double down on recruiting and retaining educators of color in our schools. We invest in vital support staff, including highly qualified counselors, social workers, educational support assistants, and more. I am proud to live in a country unique to so many others in that we provide access to free, quality public education for all students. It is my sincere belief that adopting a voucher system in any form will greatly undermine and could even eradicate that. Thank you again for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Dietrich. Representative Mariani, did you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, I have a question for the author, but I'll wait to do that. But I do have a question for our testifiers. Thank you, Madam Chair. And it's Ms. Hennen and
Ms. Dietrich.
Dietrich. Okay, thank you. You know, when I chaired, I always got that wrong, too. I was just constantly bailing around for someone to remind me who's a finalist. Thank you for your testimony. Thank you for taking the drive to St. Paul. I think it speaks of anyone. We have a big state, and it always impresses me that our citizenry is so involved and cares so much about what we do here that they'll make those kind of sacrifices. So thank you for doing that. But thank you for the work that you do in public education. Let me ask this question. We come at this issue often from, and that's not wrong, often from arguing, you know, this opportunity will be great for this individual student. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. However, it seems to me there's something else that we do through public education, which is to create a benefit to society. And so I'm really struck by both of you speaking about what I took to be a great diversity of students in your schools. What is the benefit of supporting and producing a learning environment that has that kind of diversity? We measure student achievement here through standardized tests, high school graduation rates, good things to do, but it seems to me that there's another outcome that we're after in a democratic society, and one where 30% of our, at least our public school kids, are kids of color. What is the benefit of having that kind of diversity in the school in terms of outcomes for students? Is that important? Is there something being learned there that's valuable for society? Just your thoughts on it.
Ms. Dietrich?
Madam Chairperson, I can't agree more. I think our public schools are front line in creating an opportunity for students to both share their own personal experiences and to step into the experiences of their peers and to learn from them about their rich experiences and to be able to seize the experiences of others who are different from themselves. And in White Bear Lake, I have the pleasure of teaching with my colleague who's here today, Cindy Swenson. We teach a co-taught English class that's designed to support her highest proficiency English language learner students, as well as to engage them in those conversations with their peers in a general educational classroom setting. And so we have the great good fortune of seeing those kinds of interactions on a daily basis. And now for me, because I also teach classes that are not co-taught, I can definitely see that the depth and the richness of those conversations in our co-taught class far exceeds what I see in some of those other classrooms that may not have that same degree of diversity. And in my time in White Bear Lake, I'm really pleased to have seen that our diversity has increased, and it's fun to watch what happens when students have that opportunity to openly talk with each other. And I think given the present political climate, it's more important than ever that we have those opportunities to engage in dialogue and share our experiences. Thank you.
So, Ms. Dietrich, you don't think that happens in another school setting, such as I know that we have St. Cloud Cathedral, where Representative Knobloch lives, and as a high school English teacher, I used to have my students compete with those students all the time, and it was a very diverse population, and my students learned a lot from them coming from Princeton, and it was a wonderful experience. We also competed against Apollo and Tech in St. Cloud and Shannon, and we were very proud to do that. We played some tough basketball games against Tech, as I recall, and I love that whole scope, and I think there are those of us sitting at this table who have sent our children to private or parochial schools who garnered a lot of also rewards from having our children attend some of those schools. So I think we want to look at the good on both sides. Mm-hmm. Representative Knobloch.
Well, if I can just say two things regarding the witnesses. First of all, I went through the St. Cloud Public Schools. I went through District 742, elementary, junior high, high school. I graduated from Apollo, and I want to thank Ms. Hennen for her service to the St. Cloud Public Schools for all these years. Regarding Ms. Dietrich, I guess the one thing I'd say is, a voucher is where the government pays the money to a private school. A tax credit is where individuals get money from the government and then decide where they're going to put it. In this case, they're qualified to put it actually in a public, private, or home school underneath the existing
That's
law.
Right.
And so I don't really think this can be termed a voucher because it's not money going from the government to a school. It's a tax credit where people, individuals, are getting the money and then choosing how to spend the money they have gotten back from the government.
And Representative Knobloch, I know this is not the tax committee, but do you recall how many filers have received deductions and tax credits for the other part of the present law? Do you recall the numbers? Because I know it's pretty high. Ms. Manzi's in the audience, and she
here,
knows.
I can tell you in a minute.
I know many, many parents take advantage of deductions and credits throughout the spectrum of our educational system.
Okay, this is kind of old data, but for tax year 2008, there were 230,000 people, taxpayers, that got the deduction and 54,000 that took advantage of the credit.
Thank you.
I presume it's somewhat more now, but those are, I think, a good reference.
Thank you. Representative Mariano.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would like to return to questions for the author, but not at this point. I noticed that Ms. Hennen wanted to respond to my question. I want to make sure we have an opportunity for her to do that. If you could speak to this issue of this sort of daily classroom experience in terms of the diversity issue and what the value of that is. What is it that we're producing? Is that of value to the state? Is that something we should continue to focus on, et cetera?
Ms. Mm-hmm. Hennen.
Yeah, thank you. Having the privilege of working both in where the school's population is primarily Caucasian, and in the St. Cloud system, one building that I worked in, over 50% were made of minorities, and the Caucasian population was the minority. And that is the same, too, with the elementary that I am currently working in. I am finding that with the students that I work with, and we group them according to their needs and not by their color of their skin or their culture, the kids do not see the differences. They grow up together. They might question and ask why they have a certain garb on. They might question and ask about if they're going trick-or-treating or why they can't eat certain candies. But they accept it. They're just inquiring and versus back and forth. So they're growing up without this blindness towards each other. It's more of an acceptance of each other. The same in the high school that I worked at most recently. We have a large group of students who have come out that are in the process of transgender. They could wear their shirts to identify who they are without any thought of, will I be safe? Because the students have learned to accept and know that there's diversity in life. And,
Thank you, Ms. Hennen. Questions for the author? Questions for the author? Representative Haley.
A quick question and some comments, if I may, Madam Chair.
Sure.
Back to the other question about the numbers. Do you have an anticipated figure on how many more parents will be able to take advantage of these credits and deductions with the increase?
Representative
Knobloch. Thank you, Representative Haley. I don't have a revenue estimate on it yet that would provide that. It seems to me the one I remember from 2 years ago, and this bill was introduced 2 years ago and passed this committee, and it was almost identical to this. Seems to me it was in the range of 12,000 to 18,000 more students getting a benefit underneath the tax credit.
I believe you're correct, Representative Knobloch. Representative Haley.
Thank you, Representative. I'd like to speak in support of this. I do appreciate the increase in the inflationary increase, and as you said, you know, $50,000 doesn't buy what it used to. So I could see that that would support many more families. I wanted to say, too, to all my colleagues, I appreciated the discussion over this past week regarding these issues because they are difficult issues to grapple with. The one thing I think we all share is our commitment to the children in the state of Minnesota, and we all want them to succeed. They are our future, and the education is the best thing we can give them. So I appreciate the debate and people's concern. I'm a product of public education. My parents were public school teachers. I moved back from Eden Prairie to my hometown of Red Wing one of the main reasons was to enroll my kids in a small public school system because of the connectedness that brings in a community. My district has all public schools, a couple parochial schools, but not significant private school options. But what I have seen and witnessed through friends and constituents is that children have so many needs. And so the tax credit or the opportunity here for parents to pay for tutoring, whether it's dyslexia or ADHD or comprehension issues, that kids need supports outside of school. So I really appreciate these bills that support parents in supporting their kids. And that has many, many different forms. So I don't see it as in any way denigrating our public school system or not supporting our public school teachers. We have placed historic levels of funding into schools, and I'm sure that, again, we will debate that in this session as well as to the additional funding needs that are needed. So I guess I just wanted to speak to my colleagues on both sides of the aisle that this is not an either-or to me, but it's an and it's supporting parents to help their kids in many, many ways.
Thank Representative Pryor. Thank you. So here I guess I want to get into the weeds a little bit with the bill, and to just to clarify so that so I know, so we all know what we're talking about with a tax credit. And just to be clear, and I know it's in the bill, and if I were really, really careful, I wouldn't understand it without having to ask this question.
Well, that's fine.
But refundable tax credit. So would you get a tax credit? Would you get more money back than you actually owed in your taxes so that the government is, like, writing you a check for sending your kids to private school?
Representative Knobloch.
Madam Chair, Representative Pryor, yes. In this case, it's like the working family credit, for example, which is also a refundable credit. Low-income families don't necessarily have a liability. Mm-hmm. This is the way the program is set up right now. It's the way the program has been for 20 years, that it's a refundable tax credit, and this continues the way the program has been for 20 years.
Okay. So,
Representative Pryor.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I know, you know, as we talk to each other, too, about this bill and why it makes sense to us or doesn't make sense to us, I you know, when you're in the campaign, people are talking about the taxes they pay. And what I hear from my district is that, you know, people are willing to pay taxes, but they want to make sure that their tax money is always targeted and that they want to see the results for their tax money. And we are in this this wild, wild west where we're gonna, as you said, people are going to get money from the government, and they're going to spend it, and we will not see accountability for that money because we don't keep track of private schools the way we keep track of public schools. So I would, if I were voting for this bill, I would have to justify to my constituents the people getting money from the government and not showing the accountability for it afterwards. So I am concerned about this bill.
Well, Representative Pryor, we have many refundable tax credits. You should serve on the tax committee. Ms. Manzi could give us a long list. Representative Knobloch, any comment to that?
No.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have several questions for the author. And Madam Chair, and I've chaired, so I totally respect the call of the chair in terms of who to hear from in the public, because we just can't hear from everyone. It's just a matter of time. But I do note that we do have the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, the AMSD, and the Minnesota School Board Association who had asked to testify on this. I suspect that their testimony would be, don't do this, that we have a big, important mission to support our public schools, and we have certainly gone through numbers of years where we struggled with that. So if I'm putting the wrong words in your mouth, you know, give me a vigorous, you know, shake.
They'll get their times, Representative.
Thank you. Oh, good.
There's
thank
another
you.
Bill up. They just didn't need to come twice. They were going to say the same thing, so we cut a deal.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. And of course, there is a... thank you. So I do get to hear them then. Yeah.
Yes, you will.
Very good. You know, Representative Knobloch, we debated this already this week in a different version, and I would respectfully disagree with you. This is a voucher bill, and we could certainly get caught up in the semantics of the issue. The issue is whether or not there is a use of public resources that are going to support private entities in the delivery of the single most important work that we're mandated by our Constitution to do. And that's what's on the table. So we could find another word, but until we find that word, I'm going to call this for what it is, which is a voucher bill. Here's my couple of questions here. And Representative Haley, I couldn't agree with you more about the diversity of students and the need to have an educational system that meets those. The fundamental question here is, why invest in schools that don't provide that diversity of offerings and supports, frankly, the diversity of supports to the diversity of students. Representative Knobloch, there are potentially constitutional issues here at stake. We started to get into that in the last bill. you know, frankly, I'm not a lawyer, but I don't know that the legislative case that I cited has ever been overturned in this state. And we could have that conversation later because I don't want to get into constitutional issues. But is it the intent of the author to have public resources go to schools that don't provide equal access to students? There are LGBTQ communities, students, that will most likely be explicitly forbidden from attending a number of the schools that are going to potentially benefit from this public resource going to them. We've heard about special ed already. There are EL issues. In addition to that, there are schools that don't abide by the Pupil Fair Dismissal Act, not to mention the Safe Schools Act. So is it the posture of this author, I assume it is by language, but just for the record, that it's okay for us to use public resources to support private schools that deny equal access to all sorts of students in our state and deny equal due processes for dismissal of those students from their schools?
Representative Knobloch.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, first let me say briefly, I wasn't here for whatever constitutional discussion there was a few days ago, but there was a U.S. Supreme Court case in 1983 that upheld Minnesota's tax deduction program that included private school money being deductible. And so we've already had that issue before the U.S. Supreme Court for our very own tax deduction program that's in law right now. Now, this is a tax credit. I mean, part of the bill is a tax credit expansion. Part of it's a tax deduction expansion. I suppose someone could make an argument that they're somehow different, but again, the tax credit program has been in effect for 20 years. No one's brought any sort of lawsuit against it that I know of. We have a tax deduction program that's been upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court. I guess I'm not a lawyer either, but it would be a hard sell to me to somehow say that this is not constitutional. So in regard to your other question, Representative Mariani, well, we already have a tax deduction program in law that has offered a tax deduction for private school tuition since 1955.
Yes.
Under the terms of what you're talking about. And so we're already doing that. We've done it for, 60 years. I don't really think that that's an issue. We have religious schools that in some cases have certain standards for what they want the children at that school to believe in, or at least one of the parents to believe in. We have other secular private schools that don't have those standards. That's something that, again, has been long established in law and that the courts have upheld as something that is legitimate. And so I don't personally see that as a problem. I think that there are some private schools that certainly have a significant number of low-income students, in some cases minority students, significant minority students, if you go to some of the inner-city schools, like I think you heard from a couple days ago. And so there's a variety of private schools in this state that help low-income children, help children from minority families, and I don't, different private schools try to carve out their own niche for who they want to help, dependent on what they sort of see as their market and their mission, and I don't see a problem with that.
Madam Chair.
Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, let me rephrase a bit your characterization of the behavior of some of these schools that have their standards. I would say they discriminate. And I think that's one of the issues that a number of us honestly struggle with. I mean, we can get into all sorts of emotional debates here, but we have a set of standards in our state around equal access consistent with both the U.S. and the Minnesota Constitution. And discriminating on the basis in our state, on the basis of gender and on the basis of race and income, it's pretty serious stuff, and I get that we've put our foot in the door on that issue relative to deductions. This is expanding it out into a tax credit a reality, which provides a substantive ability for these schools to dip into public resources, not just to get kit from point A to point B, but to actually pay for their operations. The issue of accountability has come up. Representative Albert, how do we know, first of all, what is the performance of these schools relative to particular kids of high need? What is the performance of these schools in our state, and how do we know what that performance is?
Representative Knobloch?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, many of the students from these schools take the ACT or the SAT, and you can look and see how they do. And I think I don't have those numbers with me, but if you looked, I think that you would see that they compare favorably to our public schools. I think many of the students take the MCA test and compare very favorably to the public schools. And I guess I don't have those numbers in front of me. We haven't, because of the law that we have in regard to how we treat private schools versus public schools, we haven't put all the same requirements on private schools, just like we have chosen to not put all the same requirements on charter schools, which are, in fact, public schools. And so we've decided for various reasons to treat different types of schools differently, even some types of public schools differently than private schools and other public schools. And for that reason, I think that the system is working. I think some competition is good. And I guess absent seeing some sort of information that private schools are really underperforming public schools, which I don't think is the case. I think, if anything, it's probably the opposite, although some of that has to deal, too, with demographics and the types of families that are in each school, and I certainly want to recognize that. But I don't think there's underperformance that I have seen.
Madam Chair,
Ms. Hannon and Ms. Dietrich, if you would, you know, vacate those chairs, because I'd like to call Ms. Kelleher up, please.
Thank you.
Good to see you. Yeah.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, Representative Knobloch, the fact is we really don't know, particularly with the use of public funds, which we should know. It seems to me the other standard here is whether or not public funds are going to be held accountable for the standards that we have set in this state around academic performance, excuse me, and the equal treatment of students. We don't know if we're comparing apples to oranges, for instance, when we look at high school graduation rates of many public, or rather private institutions. We know that high school graduation rates are high. We don't know if that's an apples to oranges thing. I can tell you from my own experience with private schools that there's a lot of nudging and pushing and counseling students out of their schools when they're found that those students might be disruptive, might not be getting it, you know, are struggling with their payments or whatever. That becomes an apples to oranges comparison then in the end with high school. Let me just finish, Madam Chair, with this. You have an inflator here for these credits and deductions. I actually don't think that's a bad thing. But here's what I want you to think about, Representative Knobloch. In your Ways and Means Chair, when we did this, 2 years ago, this body came out of here with a percentage increase on the formula for public schools. It wasn't even 1%. I believe it was like 0.7%, members. This is important for you new members to know. Quite frankly, just so I'm not picking on my Republican majority, although that was their posture, my DFL Senate friends didn't do a heck of a whole lot better. You know, I think it was maybe 1% or a little over 1% there. And, and it really took this amazing governor to put his foot down and veto our bill for us to get a decent increase in the per pupil that matches the reality of what public schools face. My point here is that we have a tendency here, and I think it's fair on both sides of the aisle, we have a tendency here to under-invest in our public education system. And so having an inflator here seems like a really good idea. The principle that you're forwarding is that we ought to at least have a minimal standard that's built into our formulas to provide support for our schools. And so I will look forward to seeing your chairman, ongoing chairmanship, continue to push this concept, not only for the few schools out here that, by the way, are partially accountable to the public, but for the many schools in the state of Minnesota that are fully accountable to the public purse. So I applaud you for that effort, and I hope that we'll see this notion of at least setting a floor for an inflationary increase for our per pupil formula to go forward in this legislature.
Well, if I could respond to that, Madam Chair, I guess,
you
know, we have most years given public schools an increase. In fact, almost every year we've given public schools an increase, except perhaps in some of the really most challenging fiscal times. Here we have a case where we've got a program that has not had an increase to account for inflation in 20 years. And so I think there is a difference between, if you just look historically at programs that have traditionally, and I think deservedly and rightfully, gotten increases almost every year, and a program that hasn't had one in 20 years. And so I think, you know, there is a reason to potentially look at treating them differently. In regard to the history, to just fill that out a little bit, Representative Mariani, I'll specifically say the number was actually 0.6%, not 0.7%. It was 0.6% each of the 2 years in the House. It was 1% each of the 2 years in the Senate.
Yes.
And the governor's original proposal was also 1% for each of the 2 years. And I think the reason for that, and the reason I originally looked at it being that low, is if you looked at the increase in spending from the 2014-15 biennium to the 2016-17 biennium, there was a $1 billion increase in spending built into K-12.
That's right.
Even if we didn't give the public school system one more dime in the last session. And so as we looked at, my initial thought was, wow, and in my case, you know, I was coming in after having been gone 8 years. I hadn't been there the previous two years to see what had happened that biennium. I looked and I thought, wow, $1 billion increase, that, you know, looks like a lot. Yeah, we should give them some more, but I don't know if we, you know, need to give them as much more as one might normally think. And I think that was the thinking of the Senate and the governor, too, because they weren't all that much different than we were. But then when you got into that $1 billion and you started looking at it and saying, oh, well, you got all day K, that's part of the increase. And you had a big jump in the formula between the first year and the second year of the biennium. So just carrying that forward was a big part of the increase. And I think there was some debt service equalization changes that caused an increase. And there were some other numbers as you got right into it. It wasn't the $1 billion, as big as $1 billion is, there was not actually that much of $1 billion that was actually going out to the average student in the average classroom. And so as we got into that more, I think everyone, the governor, the Senate, and ourselves, reevaluated and said, oh, yeah, we really do need to put some more money into public education. And that's why we all eventually came up with the two and two that we did. So I think that history is important to note. And I guess I just, you know, finally would say I respect your Representative Mariani. You know that, but you know, there's two sides to the discrimination issue here at least. And you know, I look at this and I say we have a program that is providing public school tuition support for millionaires in this state. And we're providing tax deductions to high-income families, most of which probably don't have a whole lot of diversity, but we've got a tax system that's discriminating against low-income families and probably a lot of minorities who are part of those low-income families by not providing that benefit in the tax credit program. And so I guess I respect the discrimination side that you're mentioning, but I see a discrimination issue within our tax code that I'm trying to address.
Ms. Kelleher, welcome to our committee. Please say your name and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members. My name is Grace Kelleher. I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association. My association represents every elected school board member around the state. And I'd like to say it feels a little bit like Groundhog Day, because we sort of went through this again, and now we're sort of back at it. So I will be very focused, since if you remember last time, I had the largest list of our mandates of anybody at the stand. We have a long-standing position, which really comes from our grassroots level, that opposes any new legislation requiring education funds for non-public schools and opposes tuition tax credits for attendance at private elementaries and secondary schools. The big piece about Representative Knobloch's bill that we're concerned about is the inflationary piece. And it's really like rubbing salt into a wound a little bit, because school districts, for most of our funding, receive no inflationary increases. So we're always coming back after going through inflation, and we start $500 million in the hole, because that's what we've lost. That's a lot of money, I understand, and then I want to thank everyone who helped us last year get up to a 2-2. I think the other thing that's played out all in this is we have more students, which makes our budget bigger, because they are automatically then added into our targets going forward. So we really like the opportunity to continue to work with Representative Knobloch and Representative Anderson on these bills, and make sure that it treats public schools and private schools in a similar manner.
So, Madam Chair, can I ask Ms. Kelleher a question? If I drop the inflation component, will you support the bill?
Ms. Kelleher.
Madam Chairman, Mr. Chairman, let's say I might not fuss as much.
Thank you, Ms. Kelleher. Mr. Kronquist and Ms. Doeslin, did you want to come up for this bill? And then probably we have to get to Representative Anderson's bill. She's been sitting in our audience for some time, and she's also a busy chair. Welcome. Please say your
name.
Thank
you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Scott Kronquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. I'll try to be very brief because we did testify on Tuesday, so we'll try to just hit a couple issues. And we do want to thank Representative Knobloch. We've had a nice dialogue, and he's been very willing to talk to us and working with us on other important issues like special education, so we certainly appreciate his willingness to do that. Bottom line, in a few months or a few weeks, whatever it is, you're going to be starting to talk about budget targets. And we all know you're going to have more requests than are going to be resources available. You know, just the sad reality. And so any dollars that do go through tax credits to private school tuition are going to be dollars that are not available for public schools or any other things that you get asked to fund. So I just want to make that point. The other point I want to make is there was on Tuesday a lot of talk about the achievement gap. And that, of course, is an important topic in this committee, and it's important to all of us. And some of the testifiers really kind of, I think, put forward the notion that we have tried everything, and so we have to at least try tax credits to try to attack this achievement gap. And I would take issue with the notion that we have tried everything, and just a couple of things that we have not tried, Madam Chair and members. We have not tried fully funding our special education formula, so our school districts don't have to transfer $600 million out of their general fund every year to cover mandated special education expenses. Yeah. We have a cross-subsidy in other areas, English language learner funding, $70 million every year that school districts need to transfer from their general fund to provide mandated English learner services. And some of our highest achievement gaps, as many of you know, are in that student demographic, or English learners. Another thing we haven't tried is lifting the prohibition on starting the school year before Labor Day. And in fact, that is a significant contributor. There's a major study that was done a few years back out of Johns Hopkins University studying the Baltimore Public Schools, and it showed that two-thirds of their achievement gap was directly attributable to summer learning loss. So those are just a few other things we could try before trying tax credits to see if we can attack the achievement gap. So I'll leave it at that, Madam Chair and members. I look forward to working with you.
Thank you, Mr. Kronquist. And you know how I love to carry that early school start bill.
You do, Madam Chair.
We've had our discussions, and I can bring it up again, and I'll probably get defeated. Thank you, Ms. Doeslin, for coming to our committee to say a few words before we vote on this bill. Welcome. Please say your name.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Valerie Doeslin. I represent the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, and thank you for your indulgence today. I will try not to rehash my talking points from the other day, but MASA is opposed to Representative Knobloch's bill. We respect where he's coming from and the position with which he's trying to advocate, but we just, this will be one of those things that I think we won't agree on. One of the things I'd like to just touch on a little bit, which I did not talk about the other day, was that public schools must and are happy to welcome all students who come to their doors. They do not get to have admission requirements. They do not get to deny admission because of a certain student's, you know, academic achievement or disability that they bring to the door. And so I just wanted to remind you all of that, and I would encourage you to look at the admission requirements for some of the private schools that we heard from the other day. One of the private schools had a very lengthy admissions requirement. Public schools educate everyone regardless of what they come, what they bring to those school doors. And so I just wanted to remind you all of that, and Representative Knobloch, we're happy to continue having a conversation with you about this. And then one last thing which I didn't touch on, but to just echo what Ms. Kelleher and Mr. Kroonquist said, is the per pupil formula has not kept up with inflation. Yes, we are grateful for the increases that the legislature over the years have appropriated. But if the per pupil formula were to keep up with inflation, that would involve an additional $550 per pupil. So I just wanted to make that point as well. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Closing comments, Representative Knobloch.
Well, just on the $550 figure that was just referenced, if you look at total public school funding, it has more than kept up with inflation over many years. Not saying that it shouldn't have, but it's certainly, you know, I'm certainly very supportive of public schools. But I do think that this bill is something that addresses an inequity that is within our tax code system right now. I think that for some students, public schools, for whatever reason, haven't worked. And this provides one more alternative for those students to hopefully have success in their life in a different way. You know, Governor Dayton's 2015 budget included a significant increase in the income qualification level for this program to $45,000 a year. And language practically identical to what is in here, with it just updated for inflation a few more years, did pass as part of the House tax bill in 2015. So I would really hope that you will support ending the discrimination that exists in our tax code right now against lower-income families, many of which are minorities. I hope you'll support adjusting these tax deductions and credits for inflation, which help not only private school families, but public school families and homeschool families as well. And I would appreciate your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Knobloch. The chair renews her motion that House File 387 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. Representative Mariani.
Chair, I'd like a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. The clerk will take the roll.
Erickson.
Yes.
Daniels. Mariani.
No.
Carr.
Yes.
Bennett.
Yes.
Bly. Christensen.
Yes.
Crassell.
Yes.
Haley.
Yes.
Jessup.
Yes.
Kunish-Podein.
No.
Lee.
No.
Maquaid.
No.
Pryor.
No.
Rarick.
Yes.
Erdahl. Ward.
There being nine yeses and six noes and two absences, the motion prevails, and House File 387 is re-referred to the Committee on Taxes.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Knobloch. Representative Anderson. Members, this is a similar bill. It deals with tax credits and deductions, which I'm proud to say was originated by my predecessor in 1997, which was, of course, the basis for Representative Knobloch's bill. Representative Anderson, I will move House File 255 to be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Taxes. Welcome to our committee, and please say your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm State Representative Sarah Anderson. I represent the Plymouth area and happy here today to present a bill that is long time in coming. As Chair Erickson pointed out, this credit was first introduced in 1997. And since that time, nothing has been done to modify this tax credit. It's been 20 years in the making with no changes whatsoever to it. And so what I do is I give folks greater access to utilizing this tax credit. And unlike what you heard prior, this is a tax credit that helps individuals to pay for things such as tutoring, fees for after-school enrichment programs, tuition for summer camps, music lessons, instructor fees for driver's ed, non-religious academic books, purchase of rental or musical instruments for regular use in school music class, and a host of other things, too. So it really helps individuals, and all my bill does is it increases the income threshold so more people can access it, as well as changing the phase out so it's not so punitive. And with that, Madam Chair, I stand for questions.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Are there those in the audience who would like to come to the witness table to lend their support for this change in tax policy? Are those with concerns? Are there questions from members? Representative Amy Quaid.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Erickson. This was actually something that my parents were able to take advantage of when I was a child, and I think this is it's good, and it gets to some of the issues that I heard at the doors over the election season. I do have some questions because I think one thing that we've missed as a body of privilege is what it actually means to be a low-income family, to be highly mobile, housing unstable, food unstable, to have the money up front to pay for tutoring or music classes, to have their wherewithal to do those things. And so I just want to set that tone to make sure that when we talk about the achievement gap, I think this is some of the ways that we miss it, because it relies on families to have the ability to do some of these things in the first place. I will be supporting your bill, Representative Anderson, and I think it does get to some of the issues that we've heard about, but it's the first few bills that we've heard in here do not get to some of the core issues why we have disparities in education in Minnesota, and it really is leaving some of these voices off of the table. So thank you for bringing the bill, but I just wanted to make sure that those students had a voice at the table today, and their families do as well.
Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Representative May Quay. One of the things that I didn't mention, this also provides reimbursement for transportation to and from school. So for low-income families that struggle with that cost and burden, this will help them alleviate that. So.
And Representative Anderson, I think this addresses middle-class families, too. I mean, I have folks who are in this this range of income, and they really appreciate being able to take advantage of this, especially for tutoring and other services to assist their children in our schools. Are there any other questions for members? Okay, with that, Representative Mariani.
I'd like a roll call.
A roll call has been requested. Good idea. Clerk will take the roll.
Erickson.
Yes.
Daniels.
Yes.
Mariani.
Yes.
Barr.
Yes.
Bennett.
Yes.
Bly. Christensen.
Yes.
Grassel.
Yes.
Haley.
Yes.
Jessup.
Yes.
Kunis-Podein.
Yes.
Lee.
Yes.
May Quaid.
Yes.
Pryor.
Yes.
Rarick.
Yes.
Erdahl.
Yes. Erdahl.
Erdahl's yes. Ward.
There being 16 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed, the motion prevails, and this file, 255, is referred to the Committee on Taxes. Thank you very much, Representative Anderson.
Thank you.
And thank you, members. This meeting